What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get into things, I did just drop a new promo video for my upcoming music video, I Do This For Me. You can check that out on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/KatieTrop, or you can also go to my website, katietrop.net, and check it out up there. And you can also go take a look at, if you are into gambling at all, if you just hit the Sports Talk with Trop tab up at the top. And you will see a banner once you hit that page that says Sports Talk with Trop Preferred Sportsbooks. And you can sign up with any sportsbooks you want since, you know, it's NBA Finals time. We've got baseball going. We've got college baseball World Series on tap as well. So we got a lot of sports on tap, and you might want to place some bets on those. So you can check those out on my website, katietrop.net. So speaking of the NBA Finals, let's get right into Game 1. Porzingis is back. That is about all I have to say about last night's game. I mean, the dude came out first quarter and pretty much dominated the entire game. I mean, if you ask me who had the best game last night, who really carried this Boston Celtics team, well, damn, it was Porzingis. He came back with a fucking vengeance. I mean, he was knocking down threes. He was in the paint. He had three blocks. I mean, the guy was just on some last night. So, also, you gotta, the Mavericks, I'm not quite sure they knew they were playing in the NBA Finals last night because they did not show up at all. They couldn't knock down shit. I kind of felt like, because, you know, sometimes the first half of a game, it could be dominated by one team, and then the second half, all of a sudden the other team gets it going, and then all of a sudden they got the win. And that has happened to the Celtics in the regular season this year. But Dallas, it didn't look like that was going to be the case just because they could not knock down a shot. I mean, nobody. Even Luka, he had a solid night, of course, but I mean, generally speaking, he didn't take over the game either. It was all Boston all night. Boston got the win 107-89, and it was pretty much a 20-point difference, what felt like from the second quarter to the third quarter, the fourth quarter. The third quarter, Dallas did make a kind of a run where they got close within, I believe, what, like 8 points? And then Boston was like, fuck you. And they just kept going. And, you know, Jaylen Brown, he was another guy who had a solid night last night. Pretty much the entire Boston Celtics team had a solid night last night. Porzingis ended up with 20 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 blocks. Jaylen Brown ended up with 22 points and 6 rebounds. Tatum had a solid night. It was really just an all-around good team game from the Celtics. They played great defense. They were knocking down all of their shots. And then, of course, it helped that nobody on Dallas stepped it up last night and really started to turn the tides at all. I mean, hey, it's only one game. I know Dallas could easily bounce back from that shit, but that was a terrible showing from the Dallas Mavericks, especially because the Celtics have been just sitting pretty. They've had like 10 days off, I believe, since their last game. So usually you start out rusty, and the Celtics looked anything but that last night. Game 2 is going to be on Sunday in Boston, so Boston is up right now 1-0. We'll see if Dallas steps it up for the next game. Hopefully they put on a better show than they did in Game 1. Moving on to the week of baseball, we had a couple of highlights from a few games here, beginning on Tuesday. You know, I'd mentioned Atlanta Braves and their struggles on Monday's show, and just kind of how they're just really struggling through it. They kind of seem to be down in the dumps, and then they'll be up, and then, you know, all the injuries have hurt them. But then they've got all these guys coming out of the woodworks who have been around for a while, but they just haven't had the seasons that they're having that they are now. And one of them was Max Fried had a solid night against the Boston Red Sox. The Braves got the win 8-3. And Fried had 14 strikeouts over seven innings pitched. And it was just a straight-up domination from him and the Braves offense as well. But it was really all about Fried that night. And like I said, there's another guy for the Braves who's coming out of the woodwork. And, I mean, that's why you can't count the Braves out, even though it feels like they're not as good as they are. It's just, they could easily turn it around. They have so much talent. And then you have these guys like Fried and Ozuna and Sale all stepping it up and really just having career years. It wouldn't be surprising if the Braves were able to just get it going here pretty soon. Then on Wednesday, we had a battle of the ages, really, in baseball. We had Rookie phenom pitcher Paul Skeens of the Pittsburgh Pirates going up against Shohei Ohtani of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And that's just what you want, the greats on greats. And yeah, Skeens is a rookie, but the guy has come in and basically every start he's had so far has been pretty solid. I mean, of course, he has his shaky moments, but he's a rookie. Overall, the guy is playing solid. And in this matchup, it actually ended up being an excellent battle in the first inning. When they were up against each other, Skeens struck Ohtani out. Boom, boom, boom. And just caught him slipping. But then in the third inning, when Ohtani came right back up, he hit a home run, a two-run home run. And then in the fifth inning, when they faced each other again, Ohtani got the better of him by getting a single on third base side. So, but the Pittsburgh Pirates did end up walking away with the win, 10-6. But it was just a crazy battle of great on great, just what you want to see. And Skeens actually, he started the first inning like boom, boom, boom. He struck out the first three guys he saw. And if you don't know, this Dodgers lineup is one of the best in the league. And to have a rookie come out and really dominate one of the best offenses in the league like that, you got to talk about it. Then yesterday, the Boston Red Sox went off on the Chicago White Sox. 14-2 was the final score. It actually was a season-high 24 hits for the Boston Red Sox, and pretty much everybody was touching bases yesterday. Devers, O'Neill, Ref Snyder. It was just straight-up offensive domination by the Boston Red Sox. And yeah, the White Sox are one of the worst teams in the league, but come on, still. When you see a baseball score that's 14-2, that says a lot. And then in the last bit of baseball news, we are going to actually have some London games this weekend over in London. Baseball, we got the Philadelphia Phillies versus the New York Mets playing a series over there in London. You know, they started this a couple of years ago, and it seems to be working out for them right now. And they got a pretty solid matchup. I mean, this is a good division matchup. And even though the Mets are on the downside of things, I mean, come on, it's still a division matchup. And the Phillies, hey. You're getting a good show with the Phillies, at least. So you're definitely going to see some offense, and should definitely see some good baseball over in London over the weekend. And now, speaking of baseball, we have the College Baseball World Series. It is that time of year. And so let's get right into it. Who I think is going to win the national championship this season. Let's start off with who are the top 16 seeds. Heading into the College Baseball World Series, which begins today and runs through this weekend and then again next weekend and all the way up until basically the next 3-4 weeks, they will be playing for that championship. So the top 16 teams ended up being number 1, Tennessee, number 2, Kentucky, number 3, Texas A&M, number 4, North Carolina, number 5, Arkansas, number 6, Clemson, number 7, Georgia, number 8, Florida State, number 9, Oklahoma, boo, number 10, NC State, number 11, Oklahoma State, number 12, Virginia, number 13, Arizona, number 14, UC Santa Barbara, number 15, Oregon State, and rounding out the national top 16 seeds, East Carolina. Unfortunately, my Texas Longhorns got knocked out last weekend in the regionals, so unfortunately, I won't get to see them playing in this College Baseball World Series, but that's the way it goes. So let's start off over on the side with Tennessee, starting off with the Super Regionals. We got Tennessee versus Evansville. I've got Tennessee winning that one because Tennessee is just obviously, they're number one for a reason. I mean, their total record this year is 50-11, and number two behind them is Kentucky, who was 40-14. So they basically have a 10-game lead on pretty much everybody below them. It's at least eight. Yeah, I see they have a 6-game lead over Texas A&M. So they've got a pretty hefty lead as to how they became the number one overall seed. And so Tennessee versus Evansville, I think Tennessee's just going to roll right on through Evansville. Then we have UConn versus Florida State. I'm just going with Florida State in this one. They do have a solid baseball team, and they usually play well in the tournament. Then we have Kansas State versus Virginia. I'm going with Virginia in that one. Then West Virginia versus North Carolina. I'm going with the upset in West Virginia. Then we have Kentucky versus Oregon State. I'm going with Kentucky in that one. Then we have NC State versus Georgia. I'm going with Georgia. Then we have Clemson versus Florida. I'm going with Florida. And then Oregon versus Texas A&M. I am going with Texas A&M. then that would make the matchups for the double elimination first round pairings. I've got Tennessee winning that one at, between Florida State. Then I have Virginia versus West Virginia. I have Virginia winning that one. Then I have Kentucky versus Georgia. I have Georgia winning that one. And then Florida versus Texas A&M. I have Texas A&M coming out of that one. Then the following round, I have Tennessee versus Virginia. I have Tennessee coming out in that round. And then Georgia versus Texas A&M. I'm going with Texas A&M in that one. I guess I'm just, I don't like A&M, but hey, I guess I'm just pushing Texas on through there. Plus, I know A&M, they do actually have a really good baseball team. I know. How dare I say anything good about the stupid-ass Aggies, but they do have a good baseball team. So I do have, as my national championship matchup in the College Baseball World Series, Tennessee versus Texas A&M, and I'm going with Tennessee as the champion just because, you know, over the last couple of years, they really have been bubbling and almost there, and I just think it's going to be their year this year. So I've got Tennessee winning it all. And then moving on to a little bit of weird news, you would say, is, this is going to be the first year that the NFL is playing a game in the country of Brazil. And, I mean, of course, the NFL is going to always expand or try to expand to other countries because it's money and it's been working for them in their other areas. But in Brazil, I kind of have some questions about why the hell we are in Brazil. Now, obviously, I know why the hell they're in Brazil for money reasons. But you got to wonder with what I'm about to say here, what the hell they were thinking by just going to Brazil for these reasons. So the two teams playing in this Brazil game in week one are, of course, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Green Bay Packers. If you're not familiar with their team colors, because this actually matters, both of these teams have green in their colors. Eagles have green and black, and the Packers have green and yellow. So one of them would absolutely be wearing green, and then the other one would probably be wearing their alternate jerseys, you know, the white ones with green lettering. Well, turns out neither one of these teams are not only not going to be wearing green at this game, but they can't wear green. And why can't they wear green? Oh, because of the gangs in Brazil. Also of note, the entire time both of these teams are in Brazil, they're not allowed to leave their hotels because of security reasons. So when I'm reading that, I'm like, you mean to tell me we're taking NFL games to Brazil and you're not taking into factor the actual safety? I understand not really pretending to care about the safety on the field, but the fact that they can't even wear their team colors and or leave the team hotel kind of tells me, say, let's go find us a much more progressive, safe country to go to. There's plenty of them. I haven't really had any issues over in London. Things have been going pretty well in Germany. Hell, even in Mexico, we don't have these issues. But in Brazil, the two teams with green can't wear green, and they can't leave the hotel due to their own safety. NFL didn't really think that one out too well. You might want to rethink the whole Brazil thing and maybe go to another country. Like I said, I know there's other countries on the list that we wouldn't have those issues in. I don't think, you know, it's bad enough that athletes on the road have to think about what they eat, for example, like, you know, how Michael Jordan basically was given shitty pizza and then he got sick the next day in that playoff game. And yeah, he played a great game, but he was doubling over, shitting and vomiting the whole fucking lead up to the game, basically. And he was not 100%. And that kind of started one of the things of you don't order in the towns. You basically take, all teams usually take their own food with them and their own chefs and stuff because they don't want their guys to get poisoned or end up with the shits or vomiting all day, kind of like Michael Jordan. So when I hear you can't leave the hotel, that kind of says to me, we might not want to go back to Brazil. Now, knowing the NFL, they give zero fucks about that, and they're going to go back to Brazil next year, I imagine, but this whole thing is kind of weird to me, and you might want to check out a different country over Brazil, because if you can't leave the hotel due to safety reasons, you know, fear of, like, one of the things they could potentially do is kidnap one of these guys, like, because, you know, they could get a lot of fucking money for an NFL player, so that's just very odd, and the NFL really needs to rethink the Brazil thing. Obviously, they can't rethink it for this year. It's already locked in, but you may want to go somewhere else next year instead of Brazil. Just a suggestion. All right, now moving on to the top five this week. As I did say on Monday when I was talking about Larry Allen, there's a good shot we're going to have a top five of him this week, and we are going to have a top five Larry Allen moments. You know, as I said on Monday, Larry Allen died unexpectedly, and we still don't know what the cause of death was, but he was one of the greatest offensive linemen of all time, definitely one of the greatest cowboys of all time. I mean, you're talking about just like, if you were to put like a top 10 together of just overall Dallas Cowboys, I'm sure Larry Allen would be in that top 10 for sure. He's just one of the most reliable dudes. He was just hands down one of the greatest to do it. And so with that being said, not only because I'm a huge Cowboys fan, I loved what Larry Allen brought to the team, I got to do a top five Larry Allen moment. So let's begin with number five on my top five Larry Allen moments. The Pro Bowl of 2006. So I was wrong when I brought this up. I said it was in the rookie combine, because that's usually when they do this shit. But I forgot. The Pro Bowl actually used to be somewhat interesting. I've always thought the Pro Bowl was kind of gimmicky and stupid, but they used to actually kind of make it interesting back in the day. And then now that it's flag football, you couldn't get me to turn that shit on for anything. But back in 2006, I do remember watching this. So Larry Allen, they used to have what was called the strongman competition. Basically, the strongest dude, and what they would do is who could do the most reps with the heaviest amount of weight bench pressing. And man, Larry Allen literally took 225 pounds and did 43 reps, and he made it look like it was nothing. There was even one point where Chris Berman was like, it's like this dude is lifting a spoon. That's how easy he made it look. I mean, he didn't look like he was struggling until he got to about 41, maybe 42. Once he got to 43, it was kind of like, but the dude just like, boom, 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 boom. That's how fucking strong this dude was. I mean, another thing he was known for, not just that, but one time in the weight room when he was with the Cowboys, they got it on tape. He bench pressed 700 pounds. It's crazy how strong this guy was. And that's what you want in an offensive lineman. You want the strongest motherfucker, because he's got to go up against the baddest motherfuckers like John Randall at the time, who was one of the greatest defensive linemen, Reggie White. These were some crazy dudes he was going up against, and he would just push them over like they weren't shit. So that was number five for Larry Allen. Number four on my top five Larry Allen moments, his first start. 1994, week six, he took over for the injured Mark Tuanay. And if you don't know, Mark Tuanay was a damn good offensive lineman, so he had some big shoes to fill. This was against the Arizona Cardinals, and at the time, especially in this era of Cowboys, of the Cowboys, we dominated the Cardinals. You almost never saw the Cowboys lose to the Cardinals until they started to fall apart towards the end of the 90s. But other than that, it was like when the Cowboys faced off against the Cardinals, I expected that to be a win. Didn't matter. And not only a win, but usually an ass kicking. That was a pretty typical Dallas Cowboys versus Arizona Cardinals game. And that's what it was in this one. It was an absolute domination by the Cowboys. The funny thing is, Emmitt Smith only ran for 22 yards. So you got to say, well, what did Larry Allen do? Here's what Larry Allen did. He was guarding for my dude, Troy Aikman. And Aikman ended up having 231 yards passing through the air and was only sacked one time. So the big dude was protecting him. You know, it was a great offensive line to begin with, but Larry Allen's big ass, he took care of business. And after that, that start in week six, he went on to start 197 games after that. So he was an Iron Man. He was a workhorse. And he was one of the greatest to ever do it. And it started in 1994, week six. Then at number three on my top five Larry Allen moments, this is what Larry Allen was known for. So this is a game against the New Orleans Saints. Troy Aikman throws an interception, and the defender is running, and he's running, and it's looking like he is going to have a wide open run to the end zone. Not if Larry Allen has anything to say about it. Mind you, Larry Allen weighed 335 pounds. He was a lineman. A lineman. You don't see linemen run as fast as you saw Larry Allen running. And this was what he was known for. And this motherfucker comes out of nowhere. And even the announcers are like, oh my God, there is big Larry Allen. Larry Allen tackles this linebacker and makes sure the motherfucker don't get the touchdown. And I can't tell you how many times he did that. There were so many times where you're like, where the hell did Larry Allen come from? Not even just in that moment, but also blocking up in the up ahead. All of a sudden, you just would see him come out of nowhere and Emmett gets right behind him. Larry Allen was just such a marvel. At 335 pounds to see a dude just come running, trucking. He was running faster than Aikman. And we all know Troy Aikman wasn't a very athletic quarterback, meaning he wasn't a runner. He wasn't one of those type of dudes. He wasn't fast or anything like that. He was just known for being a great passer of the ball and being exceptionally accurate and always being on time and always knowing where to place the ball for his great receivers. But running was not his thing. It was not. And in this particular one, you can even see Aikman just like, you get him, Larry, because fucking Larry is even outrunning Troy Aikman's ass. Then at number two on my top five Larry Allen moments, this one was easy. Super Bowl 30. This was the only Super Bowl that Larry Allen won with the Cowboys because he was drafted in 94. So we had already actually won two Super Bowls by then. But he was a prominent figure in Super Bowl 30, especially because this was a year after, I believe it was his second year. He's either his second or third year in the league. But he set the tone right off the bat in this game. In the first drive, I believe it was. He was either the first drive or the second drive. But regardless, he just trucks linebacker Greg Lloyd of the Pittsburgh Steelers out of the way. And if you don't know, Greg Lloyd was a bad man. He was an awesome linebacker. And you may not know who he is because he's not a household name anymore, but when the guy played, he was a dominating figure, and he just trucked Greg Lloyd to open up the biggest hole for Emmitt Smith, and really, the Cowboys pretty much just took off from there and never looked back, and ended up winning the Super Bowl. So I had to put that at number two, but number one on my top five Larry Allen moments is when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2013. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame by Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones because that's who basically who drafted him, who believed in him, and who took a chance on him. And he really just appreciated what Jerry did for him over his career. And so that's why he had Jerry induct him into the Hall of Fame or give the speech induction into the Hall of Fame. But that's obviously his number one moment because, like I said, you can argue about who's the greatest offensive lineman of all time, but no matter who you think is number one, Larry Allen is definitely going to be in the conversation. Definitely. Doesn't matter what generation he was in, the strength was out of this world. And like I said, watching this big man run. And, you know, I watched another clip when I was getting moments for this list ready. Another one was just listening to John Madden talk about how great it was to watch how Larry Allen would just like pancake dudes and just the way he blocked. It's an art. It really is. And I know a lot of people don't pay attention to blocking, but me personally, I love watching excellent blocking. And Larry Allen was the epitome of greatness and one of the greatest Cowboys of all time. So that is my top five Larry Allen moments to send off to the big guy. But he had an excellent career. All right, y'all. Enjoy the rest of the weekend of sports. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.